Hearty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to the sunny side of sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
The sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports.
The sunny side of sports show.
Great show, bro. This is sunny side of sports.
Sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Two South African rowers pushed off from the coast of Cape Town earlier this month and began what they hope will be a record-breaking journey to the 2016 Olympic city of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. They would be the first to row across the southern Atlantic. Their goal is to raise awareness about climate change. For VOA, Robert Carmichael has the story from Cape Town.
We are at Cape Town Harbour. At barely 7 meters long, the boat in front of me looks surprisingly small for such an epic voyage. At the bow is a watertight bubble where the two oarsmen can rest or take shelter in a storm. But they will spend most of their time in the rowing seats on the narrow deck that lies just 2 feet above the waterline. The distance ahead of Bram Malherbe and Wayne Robertson is 6,400 kilometers as the crow flies, but they will row much farther to take advantage of currents and prevailing winds. They will first go north along the African coast before turning west, paddling past the island of St. Helena in the mid-Atlantic, and then south to Rio, says Malherbe.
It's rowing 2 hours, resting 2 hours, 24-7, through the day, through the night, for up to 90 days. We're hoping that we're going to have tailwinds, which means we could possibly compete it in as little as 60 days.
Malherbe is no stranger to grueling endeavours. In the past decade, he has run the length of the Great Wall of China, raced on foot to the South Pole in temperatures of 45 degrees below zero, and run the Southern African coastline to fund cleft palate operations for children. He says mental strength is key.
I've done a lot of work on the ERG, the rowing machine that I have at home. Technique, skill stuff. I've got a bloke called Guy Biscoe, he's my rowing coach. On the water, I've only done probably 50 kilometres on this thing, in bits and pieces. 2 hours on, 2 hours off, 2 hours on, 2 hours off, getting my head right. Because if you overtrain, you're going to injure. And at my age, 59, I don't want to injure. So I rather go slower, err on the side of caution, and build up my fitness as I get closer to Rio. Halfway mark, I should be peaking.
The two men are travelling without a support vessel, which means they are alone in the risks they will face. Whales are one hazard. They sleep on the surface, and hitting one would roll their boat.
The boat will self-right, but it's still not pleasant if you're the rower outside or if you're the person inside.
But their greatest danger is ships at night.
We have what's called an AIS on the vessel, line of sight, so we'll pick up a vessel and it'll go beep, beep, beep and send an alarm. But they don't change course, and sometimes there's not even anyone on the bridge. So being hit by a ship, it's over for us.
All of which raises the question, why do it? Malherbe is a noted conservationist in his native South Africa. By rowing the southern Atlantic, he is hoping to encourage people to find out how they can tackle climate change. Like many things these days, there is an app for that. It's called the DOT Challenge, which stands for Do One Thing. And its purpose is to encourage people to take action in 4 categories: conservation, water, waste, and energy, and share what they've done.
That's the purpose of this journey. 2.3 million pools to get to Rio. We're hoping to have 2.3 million people on that app, doing one thing for the planet by the time we reach Rio.
If the winds are in their favour, Malherbe and Robertson should reach Rio in April. Robert Carmichael for VOA News, Cape Town.
VOA!
Friends, we can all listen to the sunny side of sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side of life.
Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Pro boxing news now on the Voice of America. Media reports are swirling that undefeated champion Floyd Mayweather will come out of retirement to fight Irish mixed martial artist Conor McGregor. But Mayweather hasn't committed to anything, judging by his latest social media posts. On Facebook earlier Wednesday, Mayweather wrote, and I quote, "Listen, Conor McGregor, if you really want to get this fight done, take care of your business with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, or UFC, and then have your people get in touch with my people." The UFC has McGregor under contract. And on Tuesday, Mayweather wrote on Twitter, "Although there have been several rumors circulating through media suggesting that I will have an upcoming fight, I'd like to set the record straight and state that there have been no deals made on my behalf in regards to a bout with any fighter at this time. I am happily retired and enjoying my life. Rest assured that if any changes come about, I will be the first to let the world know," writes Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather's last fight was on September 12, 2015, when he scored a unanimous 12-round decision victory against the American Haitian Andre Berto. Mayweather announced his retirement in the ring after defeating Berto, walking away from prize fighting undefeated with 49 wins. Floyd Mayweather will celebrate his 40th birthday next week on February 24th.
Like I always say, for every fight, everybody had a game plan. As of right now, there's not a blueprint on how to beat Floyd Mayweather. No one has found the way to break the Mayweather code.
If you were to talk to us from the deepest better part of the bottom of your heart. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
And my Voice of America colleague, Shaka Sali, will be waiting for you later Wednesday night at 18:30 GMT UTC with another edition of Straight Talk Africa. One of my favorite Shaka interviews occurred last year on Straight Talk Africa when Shaka asked former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes what he learned from the late, great Muhammad Ali.
Hey, listen, I got the best jab in boxing. I had the best jab in boxing because of Muhammad Ali, because I tried to keep up with him. And when he threw the jab, I wanted to throw the jab. I want to beat him through the jab because everybody knew how Ali was. Everybody knew that he was a good jabber. He always jabbed right-hand combination. And I wanted to be like that, so I worked on that, to beat him through the jab. And that's why I lasted so long in boxing, because I had a good jab. Everybody had to worry about the Larry Holmes jab. And then when they worried about the Larry Holmes jab, then they had to worry about the right. And so they couldn't do both. And I was able to win the fight.
What was it like being with him in Zaire back in 1974? I'm talking about the Rambo in the jungle.
In the jungle. I was there with him. I was there with Muhammad Ali, with the Rambo in the jungle in Zaire. And he trained good. I mean, you know, people love him. Ali Dumaye. Ali Dumaye.
Ali killed him.
Yeah. And, you know, there's all a lot of people that didn't speak good English, but they know how to say Ali Dumaye. We didn't know how to speak African, so we said Ali Dumaye. You know, we said the same thing. Ali Dumaye. Ali Dumaye. And it was neat. And people, everywhere you go, People love you. You know, they run after, they take little kids running behind the car, Ali, Ali, Ali. I mean, you know, it was mind-boggling. And you know what Ali said? He said, boy, he said, you're home. This is home, man. This is what our people look like. That's what we look like. And you know, he was very proud to be in Zaire. And I was just as proud as he was because I was with the greatest fighter of all time.
Any particular reason why the people preferred Ali to the champion himself, George Foreman?
George Foreman, though, it was okay boxer, but you know, but George Foreman they didn't like George Foreman. I mean, you know, because Ali, they loved Ali, they didn't like George Foreman because George Foreman wasn't no Muhammad Ali. Everywhere Ali go, people go with him, but George, they didn't do that with George. That's okay, because I didn't like George either.
I see. Have you been to Africa, Lale, since 1974?
I did not go to Zaire, but I've been to different parts of Africa already. Yeah, I've been to different parts.
What is it like to be a world heavyweight champion of the world? And you were for many years.
Well, it was an honor to be the heavyweight champion of the world. It's an honor to represent Black fighters that can be able to do something. It was great to honor white fighters if they work hard enough, they can be something. You know, it means something when anybody that works hard as I work can be anything that they want to be. You know, whether you're black, whether white, or orange, or green color, I don't care. If you work at something, you can always be that. Ali was living proof that if you work at it, you can be it. And he was one example. He moralized boxing. And he would go down as one of the greatest fighters of all time. And I'm just glad to say that I was one of the guys who helped him become one of the great fighters of all time.
That's former world heavyweight boxing champion Larry Holmes. And Larry was talking with Shaka Sali, our Straight Talk Africa host, from his home in the eastern U.S. state of Pennsylvania. And that interview originally aired last year on The Voice of America.
This is The Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
Listen to VOA's program lineup, live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
VOA!
I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOAsunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOAsunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
And if you check out my Facebook page today, Wednesday, you'll see a photo of me in studio with Nnamdi Hollywood Moeta, our reigning prince of pugilistics. The photo was taken in 2004, back when I had a little more hair. Turning to athletics, Ethiopian Faisa Lelisa, the silver medalist in the men's marathon at last year's Rio Olympics, had an emotional reunion with his family on Tuesday, Valentine's Day, here in the USA. The 27-year-old Ethiopian met his wife, Iftu Mulisa, and his two children, 5-year-old daughter, Soko, and 3-year-old son, Sora, at Miami International Airport in the southern U.S. state of Florida. Faiza sparked worldwide headlines after crossing the finish line in Brazil last August. He crossed his wrists above his head to protest the Ethiopian government's treatment of his Oromo people. The anti-government gesture put the runner at grave personal risk and possible retribution toward his family. Faiza Lelisa spoke with the Voice of America's Afan Oromo service by telephone from Miami, and he said, and I quote, "It's been tough living alone. Back home, I had a lot of support. It hasn't been easy, but that's part of the struggle. You don't give up." Faiza Lelisa has been given a special U.S. skills visa with the help of his lawyer, and he has settled in the western U.S. state of Arizona in Flagstaff, and his family entered the USA on immigrant visas. Joining us once again on the Sunny Side of Sports is the Voice of America's social media reporter, Andrew Palcheski. Sporty greetings, Andrew.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. Good to be here with you.
Welcome back, Andrew. That's kind of a nice story I just read about with the Ethiopian athlete reuniting on Valentine's Day with his family.
It is a nice Valentine's story, for sure.
What else is trending out there in the sports world, Andrew?
Well, I hope you like soccer, because we've got a quartet of soccer stories to talk about today. So a lot to talk about. I'll try to fit it all in, but we'll start with one of the greats of the game, Diego Maradona. Not so great for him right now. He is actually facing allegations of assault after he apparently hit his girlfriend while he was in Madrid. And then on top of that, threatened a reporter when asked about it, telling him that if he hit him, he would lose his nose and he would destroy him in a one-on-one fight.
Wow.
So not great.
Strong words.
Very strong words. Not great for him. Not a lot of love post-Valentine's Day that he's showing. Worldwide, he's trending right now as people talk about these allegations and what that might mean for him going forward. More than one person, though, commenting on social media saying, "When I saw his name trending, I was worried for a moment that he had died." So I'm glad to see that he's not dead, but I'm not so glad to see that he's facing some of these allegations of abuse. So we'll see how that turns out.
I think it's safe to say Maradona has always had kind of a feisty side to him.
Absolutely. It was something that he was known for, I think, on the pitch playing for Argentina. Maybe now he needs to temper that a little bit now that he's out of his playing days. But like I said, we'll follow that story as it develops on social media.
What other soccer stories are trending, Andrew?
All right, so we move from them, Diego Maradona, to another current great of the game, and this is a more positive story. This is Carly Lloyd, of course, FIFA Women's Player of the Year, scored the hat trick for the U.S. women in the 2015 World Cup. She has made a big announcement. She is leaving the Houston Dash of the National Women's Soccer League here in the U.S., and she is going to play for Manchester City's women's football team. So huge news going over to Europe, one of a number of U.S. players moving over to Europe in recent years, going over to that league. And a lot of excitement for her, though, on both sides of the Atlantic. The Man City women tweeting out saying, "World Cup winner, check. Two-time FIFA Women's Player of the Year, check. Double Olympic gold champion, check. Welcome Carly Lloyd," and hashtag welcome Carly. So a lot of excitement from her fans on, like I said, either side of the Atlantic. One person tweeting out saying, "Best of luck at Man City, Carly Lloyd. We'll be cheering for you and supporting you loud and proud back in the States. Tear it up." So a big move for her. Now here is the one wrinkle in this whole very nice story. Carly Lloyd is apparently a Liverpool fan and has been since childhood. In fact, she did a video with the Liverpool men's team not too long ago, a few months ago, that made the rounds on social media. So there's a bit of a question about who her allegiance is going to be for when she goes to Man City. But she might have to address that if she makes a press conference about this move.
Andrew, I am looking right now at Carly Lloyd's Facebook page, and I'm pleased to report that she has just updated her profile picture. And she's wearing a Man City jersey with a big smile on her face.
So maybe those smiles are more for Man City and not so much about Liverpool.
Yeah, I think she's made her allegiance pretty clear. Certainly the ones that are going to be paying her, she wants to have their allegiance to them. But she's already done a short video with the Man City women's team wearing the jersey that they put out on social media. So I think it's pretty clear who her allegiance is now. She may have been a fan of Liverpool years ago, but today it's all Man City.
Manchester, of course, with two of the big powerhouse clubs in European football, with Manchester City as well as Manchester United. I think it's safe to say she's probably going to get more attention in Manchester than she did here in the USA.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is that this National Women's Soccer League doesn't get a lot of attention here in the U.S., but these club teams in Europe do. Certainly with the name behind it, Manchester City, of course, very well known worldwide. I think that's part of the reason why you've seen a lot of U.S. players, both men and women, going over to Europe, because those clubs are so established and they do garner a lot of attention.
What else is trending in the soccer world, Andrew?
Well, starting this Sunday, we're going to have a lot to watch on Facebook. Football season, American football may be over, but Liga MX is going on, and we're going to have a new way to watch that, the Mexican top soccer league, and it's going to be on Facebook. Facebook has just announced a partnership with Liga MX to broadcast those games on Facebook with Univision, of course, Spanish language network. So you can go to Univision Deportes and their video page on Facebook, or you can go to Facebook's video page, and starting this Sunday, you'll be able to watch those games, more than 40 games that they're going to be broadcasting over the course of the season. Now, the caveat is it's only available right now for U.S. Facebook users, so it's not available worldwide, but it does mark in the U.S. a step forward for Facebook in terms of live sports broadcasting. We've talked about on the show before that Twitter is partnered with the National Football League, with the National Basketball Association, with the PGA Tour to do some live sports on Twitter. Well, now Facebook's getting into the foray with this Liga MX. And I think it speaks, too, about how popular soccer is becoming in the U.S. We talked about Carly Lloyd and what fan base she has. Well, there's a lot of people in the U.S. who watch soccer regularly, so this is hopefully going to bring more of them into the sport, and in a new way, watching on Facebook instead of TV.
Andrew, I encourage our Voice of America listeners to follow the Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOASunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOASunnySports. If you go to my Facebook page, you'll see a photo of black polo player Lucky Nsingo. During Tuesday's show, reporter Darren Taylor in Johannesburg had a nice feature on polo in South Africa, and we heard from Lucky Nsingo and how he's a trailblazer, shattering stereotypes in South Africa as he plays polo and romps on the horses. I think he grew up with horses and he loves horses, and that's sort of how he got involved with the sport. What else is trending, Andrew?
Well, I promised the quartet of soccer stories, so here's number four. The Philadelphia Union in the MLS Soccer League here in the U.S. Has just issued a job announcement for a new position, a CTO. Now, CTO, usually when you think of business or any kind of organization, means chief technology officer. But they're not looking for a chief technology officer. Their CTO is a chief tattoo officer. So they put out an announcement that they're looking for a chief tattoo officer, and they put out this announcement on their website and social media. I'll read a couple of excerpts. They say, just as tattoos are for life, fans choose a club passionately to support for life. And to reflect this love of ink and club, the Philadelphia Union is searching for the first ever chief tattoo officer. And they go on to say that players, coaches, front office staff, and even fans will come to you for their tattoos, union-related or not. So potentially a pretty big boon for whoever this tattoo artist is that they choose. Also, of course, I'm sure a lot of Philadelphia Union tattoos that they're going to be doing. A lot of fans kind of skeptical about this, saying, why exactly are they hiring a tattoo officer? But could be a great way to boost that fan base and boost excitement for that club. So we'll keep you all posted if they hire their CTO, chief tattoo officer.
Thanks, Andrew. VOA social media reporter Andrew Palcheski, and we'll hear from you again on Thursday, Andrew.
Sounds good.
And that wraps up the February 15th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Nick Ivanoff. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. And that's the sunny side of sports.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
To spur the development of innovative technologies to reduce food loss and waste in Africa, the Inter-Region Economic Network, or IREN, is conducting the inaugural East Africa Post-Harvest Technologies Competition 2017 through a grant from the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID's, East Africa Trade and Investment Hub. The call for applications is now open. Reducing food loss and waste is essential for improved nutrition and food security. The Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations estimates that one-third, 1.3 billion metric tons, of the food produced for human consumption is lost or wasted along global supply chains. This accounts for a 15% income reduction for over 470 million participants in the agricultural value chain, including smallholder farmers, manufacturers, and retailers. The competition calls on innovators from across the East African community to pitch technologies that address challenges in the post-harvest management of food crop commodities and enhanced labor production. The competition will offer the top 25 participants an opportunity to showcase and pitch their ideas to potential partners, including development partners, donors, governments, farmer and trader associations, and investors. The competition will take place in May 2017 during a special session of the upcoming East Africa Post-Harvest Technologies Fair. The top three contestants will split a seed fund of $30,000 through a generous contribution of agribusiness corporation Syngenta and other partners. Innovators, researchers, and individuals aged 18 and above from the East African member countries, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Rwanda, and Burundi, are welcome to apply. Application forms, competition guidelines, and awards information are available on the competition website, www.younginnovatorsinagribusiness.com, or email profiles to yiac@irenkenya.com. Finding innovative solutions to complex development challenges is paramount to USAID's mission, said USAID Mission Director for Kenya and East Africa, Karen Freeman. The East Africa Post-Harvest Technologies Competition 2017 supports locally driven solutions for greater East African food security. We are proud to be the sponsors of this competition.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
and AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.